Hello and welcome to Conquest Corner. Today I have the privilege of speaking with Darren Hazelwood. Darren is a self-employed investor. He owns his own building merchants firm in Hertfordshire. Darren classes himself currently as a semi-professional trader. He has worked very, very hard to get to this stage where he can invest as much as he wishes to into stocks and shares and into the companies that he wishes to invest in. Hi, Darren, how are you?
I'm very well, Peter. Good afternoon. How's you?
I'm good, thank you, sir. Thank you ever so much for agreeing to do this interview with me, Darren. I know you're busy running your own business these days, so it's very kind of you to share this time with our listeners.
It's a pleasure. It's all about sharing the knowledge, Peter, for me.
Thank you very much, mate. Now, Darren, what I like to do at the beginning of these interviews is just share with people the journeys that the individuals that I'm interviewing have had from boy to man as such. So I just wanted to give you the opportunity now to share with our listeners your background, where you started, education, family, etc., please.
Yeah, okay. I'm a council estate boy. I left school with only a couple of GCSEs at what you call grade C level. And I started my working career with doing general menial jobs. I worked in Woolworths for a time. I laid gas mains, worked in a flour mill, and also spent some time working in warehousing, just general labouring and that type. But always with aspirations to exceed my starting point. It did set me apart a little bit. I had a good group of mates. We're still all in contact now, and we're all spread in the four corners of the country and across the globe, actually. And yeah, that's where I've come from.
Cool. I mean, yeah. There's a lot to be said about surrounding yourself with good people who can, you know, you can self-motivate each other and coax each other into doing better things and, you know, achieving things.
Definitely. As you grow up, your network expands. You become more aware of individuals and what individuals can bring to you. And every day is a learning curve. But I think the grounding you've had and the people that you spent a lot of time with in your youth is important. And you can take a huge amount from that.
I absolutely agree, mate. I mean, unfortunately, I wasn't that bright when I was in my youth. And I think I was probably surrounded by people that were equally not as bright. So I had to leave where I was being brought up and go into the Royal Air Force to surround myself with brighter people. So, yeah, I understand that journey completely.
Peter, I don't believe that you can measure that brightness through exam results. There are so many different levels to it. I could use David Beckham as an example, very often derided in his younger days for coming across as a bit simple almost. Yeah. Yeah. Now the guy is worth $300-400 million.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Family man. Mm-hmm. He's got everything that people are aspiring to.
Yeah.
To me, he's one of the brightest guys on the planet.
Yeah, he's done exceptionally well. And he's equally, as he's grown older, surrounded himself with exceptionally bright people to enable him to do certain things. And he's pushed himself and he's worked extremely hard as well, you know, and he's had a couple of issues throughout his career, which he's overcome. So, yeah, exceptional talent. Right, so I wanted to ask Darren, there was a time, yeah, when you were in your youth and you were starting to do these various jobs, yeah? Obviously, your parents and your parenting and your friends enabled you to think, I can do better than this, and my parents want me to do better than this, and I want to do better than this. What was the trigger for you and the spur to drive you from wherever you started from?
I've always I've always been, well, from a parent's perspective, been led to believe that if you want it, you've got to go and get it. Don't point the fingers. Don't look at others. If you want to do it, if you want to achieve it, you can. But to do that, you've got to work hard. These days, I would say you've got to work smart, but that comes with youth. So the grounding was there to get out there and do it. I've watched my dad work 7 days a week to afford to buy his council house, as it was at the time, you know, and that rubs off on kids. And what your children are seeing today is what's going to be mirrored in them, through you in their later life. And you know, it's really, really important, and to feed that knowledge onto them and to give them an opportunity and to let them know that they can do anything. And they can. Any kids can achieve anything, regardless of background, regardless of social standing, regardless of their network. They really, really can absolutely achieve what they want to, but they've got to work at it. If you're not going to work at it, if you're going to look to others, you can use your network, but if you're not going to take control of that and do these things, you're not going to achieve it. And that's an important message to get through to kids, especially in this day and age, because it's none of it's easy, especially with the internet. Anybody comes up with an idea, it can be replicated in months. In business, we're all acutely aware of that.
Very, very true. Very, very true. So, Darren, where from your background then, where did the interest in stocks and shares begin, commence, etc.?
I've always had a natural interest in money and finance. What I didn't have was probably the confidence to believe in my ability to do something with that. I bought at about 19, I bought a company called Manx and Overseas, and they've gone through, I'd actually researched their history a little while back. They've gone through different changes in that time. I quite obviously was very unsuccessful. But at that time, I didn't have the understanding or the knowledge to do the due diligence or the confidence to approach anybody about that. But the natural business interest has always been there.
Okie doke. So you say that was the very first stock you purchased?
It certainly was. It
Yeah,
certainly was.
and where you're 19, how did you get the funds together for that first purchase, and what made you take the leap, and what research had you done prior to that?
I believe we're going back a few years now, Peter.
Of course.
I believe they were a tip in the Mail on Sunday.
Right. Okay, the good old
That
Mail
was
on
the
Sunday,
paper.
yeah.
Yeah, that was the paper that might, would it be the Midas column?
Yes, might have been, yeah.
And I think I read up on there now. I'm racking my brains as we talk, but I believe they owned a department store in Douglas. But the key to it was that was a profitable business, but they also had some potential away from there. They were generating funds. So even at that stage, I did know what I was looking for, even if I didn't know how to achieve it. And it hasn't changed. My strategy hasn't since then.
Yeah, they became did they become net-centric at one stage as
Yeah,
well?
that's absolutely correct. Wow.
I'm not sure what happened to them after that, but I remember the change in the name to something a bit more techie on AIM. That's going back a bit now.
That is, and as I say, they definitely did change their name to NetCentric and issued a load of stock, if I remember rightly. I think they eventually become a shell, and I believe that they've evolved into a possibly into an oil and gas stock of some description. But as I say, I haven't completed the circle on them up to 2016. I think I got to 2012. But yeah, it's happy days.
Well, this is the
eventually, I will hasten to add.
Yeah, this is the beauty of it, though, Darren. I think we all start out, you know, we make those tentative steps in the stock market, and for 90%, 99% of us, it is a tip somewhere, or it's some, you know, a bulletin board that's going crazy about a particular stock, and we're like, and we make that first leap, you know.
Yeah, you've got to remember, Pete, this is before the days of even this thing called the internet.
Oh, yes, of course, yeah.
Very, you know, we're all growing old together.
Yes, true, yeah. It was the Sunday Times, wasn't it, and the FT. Yeah,
yeah,
lucky.
It was. Yeah.
Okie dokie. So you made that first investment, Darren. Are you saying that that one, you know, didn't quite work out for you?
It didn't. What the outcome was, to be honest with you, I was buying through Barclays Bank in the middle of Hitchin. Going in there and made my purchase through them. There's even an outside, in fact, I still believe I've got the share certificate upstairs somewhere.
Wow. Okay.
If they've hit several billion barrels of oil in their latest, I might even hold 10 pence, but I very much doubt it. It's good days.
Okie dokie. Right. So that was your first stock, Darren, and you admittedly were going from tip sheets then, and you know, the mail on Sunday, etc. So do you remember how it evolved from there, in a sense of what research you did, what sort of stocks you then moved on to?
My interest has always been there. It's interesting when you're sitting in a warehouse with a load of lads and lasses, and everybody's reading the Sun straight to the sports section,
mm-hmm.
and you're sitting there at times with the Financial Times, with the FT, and you're reading through snippets, and you're trying to build your information. And I didn't actually know what I was looking for. I just knew that I had an interest in it. And that was probably principally down to my background, I suspect.
Yeah. I think the thing is as well, is that you think about it now, looking back, the majority of the people working in that warehouse would be thinking, what's Daz up to? You know what I mean? With that paper. What does he think he know? You know what I mean? You know what I mean? And that's what happens. Sometimes you've got to step out of the circle, haven't you, to have a look inside. I'm thinking at the time when you're working in the warehouse and you're reading those papers, different to the Sun and the Mirror, I'm sure some of your colleagues must have thought you're a bit strange, saying, what's Daz up to doing that?
Yeah, they did. They kind of got used to it to a certain extent, and it was different. But because it was a world that we weren't in, and you're not moving about in, people just took it as, well, that's sort of what he does.
Yeah.
And I loved it. I absorbed it. I learned from it. As I touched on earlier, you know, you learn. You naturally levitate towards something you've got an interest in, I think. And that's anything in life. Again, we go back to kids. They excel at what they're interested in.
Yes, very true.
If you want to give kids their maths homework or their any homework, actually, they're generally not interested if they know they've got a ball in the back garden to kick about. So it's the same as adults, isn't it? We levitate interests.
Very true. So when you were starting out in investing, Darren, would you say you were a higher risk investor then, or were you just nurturing your research when you were younger?
With hindsight, I was nurturing my research. I was trying to understand what it's all about, what actually goes on, what the opportunities are, how do you get to these opportunities, how are these people doing it, what makes them different from me, what makes that network different from the network I'm in. At the time, I wouldn't have taken that view. but it's experience and knowledge that has taught me that in reality I was taking part in the University of Life for me personally.
Absolutely. I've got to agree with you. I mean, I think one of my mantras happens to be every day is a school day for me, you know, learning something every single day, Darren, whether it be the stock market or just about life and individuals, in, per se.
You've got to be open-minded in life.
Absolutely.
In fact, with what I do, 99% of people are brilliant. They're magic. Now, they might not be your cup of tea. They might not be my cup of tea. But that's irrelevant because they're someone's cup of tea and they've got an interesting story. They've got an interesting antidote. You know, they might be rude. They might be happy. But every one of them you can learn something from. And it's great when you see people like that. Absolutely fantastic.
Agreed. Absolutely agree. Now, so you've gone from you're nurturing your talents, you're nurturing your research, Darren, yeah? You started off with banks overseas and a few others. Now, as an investor, how would you describe yourself? Are you cautious, long-term, FTSE, AIM? What sort of stocks are you liking and been involved in?
I would say I'm ultra high risk at this stage. I know what I like. I know what I'm looking for. I know what I want to see in a board of directors. I'm not scared to tell them that. And my own personal goals and ambitions mean at this stage I'm ultra high risk.
Okay, so when you say ultra high risk, can you share with us what sort of stocks are you talking about? What size, what sector?
I'm almost predominantly in the commodity sector at the moment on AIM.
Yeah.
In the some of the micro caps. Okay. The market hasn't recovered in the way that I thought it would 12, 18 months ago. I thought we'd be further down the path. But every day I do see signs that this will come. And it's getting closer and closer. And there's a lot of companies, in my opinion, out there that have added considerable value for not a lot of investment. And they're the ones I'm trying to spot. They're the ones I'm trying to get into. I will combine that with creating a line of communication with a CEO to understand the person. I'm not after knowing anything more than anybody else. That's RNSs.
Yeah.
And people would probably be pleasantly surprised how cautious these guys are.
Yeah.
And I still make the mistake of I will communicate and possibly ask a question that's price sensitive, even though that isn't the nature of the intended nature of that question.
Okay.
It's about understanding the individual. If you understand the individual, you've got a chance of understanding the business and what they're looking to achieve, both personally and professionally, and how they go about that.
Yeah.
It's a business is really simple, and there will be a million people that will contradict me on that. But the reality is, it is very, very simple. Only people complicate businesses. I don't want to deal with complicated people. I'm not a complicated person. I'm not clever enough to be complicated. And with these resource stocks, there are a number that I've seen. You look at what they've raised, you look at what they've done with that money they've raised, and you can only see value. There's only value there. And I think we, over the course of the next few months and possibly 18 months, we'll see some astronomical gains in stocks. I just hope I'm in the right ones.
Well, I wish you luck with that, Darren. What I wanted you to expand on, though, and this is very important for the ordinary investor, especially on AIM, is your criteria for choosing these particular stocks, but more importantly, the individuals. How are you critiquing and filtering the CEOs and CFOs that you've seen and you now address and see as the ones that you want to put and back with your hard-earned money? What are you looking for, Darren?
I don't want to see them pulling up as an AIM CEO in their Aston Martin, for starters. That's not the nature of that beast. That's for a higher level. I want to know that the person's hungry. Now, people are hungry for different reasons. Some may be hungry to prove others wrong. Some may be hungry for wealth. Some may be hungry to prove things to just to those around them. But I want to see hunger. I want to see, when I speak to the individual, they've got to have a clear aim and goal as to what they're looking to achieve. Because it's easy to get distracted in any business, as it is in life. And I want to know that they've got that focus. I don't want to see a hodgepodge, which you can see at this level.
Yes, indeed. And invariably, we see that quite a lot on AIM and also on the FTSE. You see some nightmare situations happening regarding charismatic leaders who, you know, come out and tell the city and investors exactly what they think they want to hear, and then invariably don't deliver the goods. So absolutely, you need to have the right people, you know, running companies. So with saying that, Darren, can you just touch on some of the times when you've made maybe an example where you've made a mistake regarding that company or that CEO and that board of directors? And equally, can you give us a really good example when you've made a really good decision regarding that particular board and that company and what they've done for you, please?
I can probably incorporate that into one company. And I'm not a trader. I'm an investor. I look to invest. And I was my real first big winner was Premier African Minerals. I watched the stock. I liked what they were doing. I had communications with them. I liked what I was hearing. I liked the plan. It was a very simple plan. You'll see there's a common theme coming through my thinking. It was to get the overground workings going in Zimbabwe. That would pay for the underground development of the mine. At this stage, the company had, from memory, 300 or 400 million shares in issue. They rose substantially for me, and I made some really good money. They got involved with Darwin. I still remember the day very well. Wasn't overly, hadn't really researched the potential there. Sold the stock and then bought it back the same day, 10% cheaper, and then watched it go down as it issued confetti. So I had taken some off the table, and I'd made good money out of it. So there's no complaints. However, once they started issuing confetti, the company had no choice but to continue to do that. There were so many lessons, and I'm so pleased that I followed the business up and all the way back. I think they placed at 0.019, and it has to be said, they're up 200% from there today, and there's a lot of very, very positive noises. And I hope that the business model and the company become ultra successful, because there was nothing wrong with the assets they built. I think they were naive in their funding and how they'd done that. And my take from Prem is that you can get lessons out of everything, out of the positives and out of the negatives, and research what they're doing, understand what they're doing. And that's what that drove me to. and understand what impact that the different mechanisms all have within your individual stock, your individual business. And they ticked a lot of they ticked a lot of boxes for me, and they taught me a lot of lessons. And you've always got your eyes open, and you're always understanding. And as I say, they're on the rise again, and hopefully for a lot of people, they'll make a lot of money. I'm out for personal reasons, but they're still there fighting.
Yeah, so that was a lesson for the good, bad, and the indifferent regarding a particular stock. Can I just ask you, Darren, for those that don't understand and are still learning and are new to the stock market, can you expand on, because I've got a different version of what confetti is, but you might have your personal version of what it is. Can you share that with us?
The issuing and continual issuing of shares into the market. So if a company has 1 million shares at £1, the company is valued at £1 million. If the company has 100 million shares and it's still valued at £1 million, it's 0.1. If you can't do those basic maths, you shouldn't really be in the market, and that's no disrespect to anyone. It's a very basic understanding that it's a surprising number of people that haven't got that. So they must just look at those, work out where the market caps come from, how the market cap is calculated, because it's easy for us all now to understand that, but it's not easy at the start.
No, it's not. And I think, like you touched on there, it's very, very important to look at, you know, when a company IPOs, the number of shares in circulation to what happens 3, 4, 5, 10 years hence. And you think, what? How many shares have they got? And you're looking at 100 billion shares, you're thinking that cannot be possible. But there are companies out there with 50, you know, 100 million pounds, 100 million shares in circulation. You're thinking, how many shares do you have to purchase to move the dial, you know? So it's very, very concerning. Right, so Darren, we've talked about Prem and the learning that you got from that. What has been your wisest investment decision to date?
I would have to say my wisest has been watching with delight Ariana Resources. People would look at that. Is it my biggest overall winner? No, it's not. But I've got to know Kerim and Michael over the years. The way I'd done that was going to events. I like Kerim. But what I particularly like about this business is the way that they've continually, they've issued shares, but they've continually added value when they've issued those shares. And by issuing shares, they're raising money. And what have they done with that money? Now I'm looking at a business, they own 50% of a processing plant in the Red Rabbit project. They have an asset in Salimbas that could be absolutely anything. They've got some other small deposits in Varadi in Turkey, probably pronounced completely incorrectly, I hasten to add, that could feed into the Red Rabbit. But these guys, if you do your calculations, their market cap's about 15 million, which the market is not giving them the respect they deserve. They've raised in total to achieve where they're at, they've raised something like 18 million, 19 million pounds in the whole lifetime history of the company. The resources growing at Red Rabbit, and this is very much a personal opinion, it'll be jorked to find about above 1 million ounces, in my opinion. They've last week they announced they've got it over 600,000 with Salimbas. With everything you look at, how can this market value that business at 15, 16 million pounds? These guys, if you gave Kerim money to create value and substantial money, the world is his oyster. And their stock, I was in at 0.8. I believe, I don't look every day at my stocks, I hasten to add, Peter.
Yeah,
which
you shouldn't do, mate. If you're a long-term investor, you shouldn't need to.
I'm not a trader. I believe they're about 1.7. They've been above 2p. And I think this company has got a long, long way to run. They've got Ashgard, which is a 100% owned entity that has assets and I believe has cash as well, that's sitting there pretty much dormant at the moment. Hopefully they'll do something with it, because I believe they will. But yeah, when I look at people and I look at what they've done, and they've taught me a few lessons along the way as well. So about how the business operates as in the market. I've seen them raise money when I wasn't expecting it. And of course, the more due diligence you do, the more you understand the businesses you're getting involved in, the more you understand why they're doing it, at what stage they're at. So I guess this is always going to have a small place in my heart, to be honest, on many levels. And it's got so far to go. It wouldn't surprise me to see Kirim create a £1 billion plus business here. I genuinely wouldn't. And with sound reason. Hardest place to go, Pete, they say, is from a pound to a million. Once you've got that first million, the rest becomes easier and easier. Ariana, you see what they've done. Kirim, they had £5,000 in about 2005. And what they've taken that to, is should not be discounted.
Mm. Yeah, that's a very valid point. I think what I'm gaining from you, Darren, here is, and it's been reiterated by so many other people that I've spoken to on Conquest Corner, is the importance of research. You know, do your own due diligence, do your research, and if you've found a stock or found a company or a group of CEOs and CFOs or a partnership that have done it before or are doing it currently, that are trustworthy, then they can be backed and invested in for the long term. You know, so that's an example that you've just given there. And there are others out there as well on the FTSE and on AIM and other sectors of the market other than oil and mining that have done just that. But, you know, unfortunately, Darren, as you found out with some of the companies that you've investigated, there's not that many of them about, you know. Unfortunately, I'm not sure why, that there's more companies out there and other people that seems to be given the wherewithal of not consistently delivering the returns for their shareholders.
I agree. And I touched base with a CEO on this very thing. I personally would think there is almost a call to get the trust back into the market. There's a call for some kind of charter that by choice a company can sign up to, so that investors can believe that until there's a cash generative event, be that production, a sale, however that may transpire, that the board are not going to be taking £1.5 million out of the business, because all they're doing is taking the money out of the shareholders' pockets. That's got to be replaced. If they've got no producing or sellable asset, that is all they're doing. They're doing that so that they can pay their mortgage, so that they can feed the family, so they can go on holiday. Do you know, if they want to do that, go and get a job.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I've had to do. And, you know, I've built things up. But don't take it out of people's pockets who are out at 6 o'clock in the morning working really hard. And then you've come along with your big white smile and a few niceties, and you know, you finally responded to a few emails, and you're taking money out of their back pocket so that you can go on holiday. No time for that whatsoever. No time at all. And in fact, I would go as far as to say that that the market, until it addresses this, could potentially struggle going forward, as we've seen a number of companies on AIM come down.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately and rightly, once certain companies and individuals get tarnished, you know, the share price of that particular company will sit there and be in the doldrums for a long, long, long time, unless they can come back. So, unfortunately, for that CEO, you know, he's not going to get an exit strategy that he wants. But unfortunately for their shareholders, they're going to be sitting there thinking, what do I do with this piece of paper that's worthless now, you know? So that's
right.
Let's not
mistake that with making mistakes, because we all make mistakes.
But when it's down to you personally, that's fine. You know, it's when it's down to the company's lack of you know, wherewithal and you know, execution, you know, or greed, then it's just bang out of order.
I agree. But this is as easily mistaken with making. You've still got to have the flexibility to make business decisions that may go wrong, because you're at a value end of the market.
Yeah.
And we could go to many where we've seen financial disasters through people trying. Well, that's the nature of the beast at this level. Yeah. But you've got to be trying. You've got to be trying. And I'm comfortable with that.
Cool. So one of the things you said, Darren, is that you're one of those individuals similar to several people I've spoken to that believes in looking in the whites of of the board of directors, CEOs, CFOs' eyes, attending these seminars, going to the AGMs, ringing them up, asking difficult questions. You know, and clearly you've benefited from doing that over the course of the last decade or so in getting involved in shares at more and more and a significant level.
Totally. I would say to anyone in this day and age, chuck your phone away, chuck your laptop away, and get down to these events. Mine in Maven's a good example in the sector. Put on some really, really good events. Share Talk do exactly the same. Get there, speak to these guys. Don't be scared of them. You know, four or five years ago, even though I was running my own business, I probably had some of them on a pedestal, some that deserved it, some that didn't. But get in there and talk to them. By very nature, these guys, they want to please. We all want to please. We all want to be liked. And don't be scared to ask those questions, and don't be put off by the answers. If you think you're being spun, do you know what? For me personally, that stock ain't for me. If I feel that a CEO or a board of directors member needs to spin me, then they may feel like they've spun you, but you're certainly not gonna. I may not point that out to you at that moment, but you're not going to see any of my money, and I don't get many wrong. And there's some, but on the flip side of that, there's some absolutely superb people out there. It would be wrong of me not to mention Paul Johnson. The guy's got a record of taking companies with very small market caps and really putting some real value into that business. But Paul. I've seen some of the criticism of him. This guy has been so willing to share his knowledge and to impart his understanding without forcing it down you. It's fantastic to see people about like that. It really, really is.
No, you're right. We've seen Paul, and we've had quite a lot of involvement with Paul and by Share Talk, and he's always quite candid and open when things are going well, and also equally when things haven't gone so well, he's spoken up and challenged equally other CEOs and CFOs at some meetings and some seminars and some events, and he's always as he's trained, it's a trained accountant, so he knows how to look at books and he knows where value is to be found, so. So he's an exceptional. He's been an exceptional investor over a significant period of time.
I think with Paul, we all know what the question's going to be. I think every CEO in the room, if Paul's sitting down, the hand goes up. How much cash you got?
Absolutely, the gun's been fired. Yeah, already. Now, Darren, I'm conscious that you've probably already answered the question I'm going to ask next, in the sense of what would you change regarding the investing landscape. We touched on about a charter and BODs signing up to enhance investors' confidence as such.
It is. And I don't see any issue really why that couldn't happen. The only reason for not wishing to do that is that you're looking to take more out of the business than the business can afford. If you are raising money to create value, to increase your asset base, to potentially move the business onto the next stage, then that is the name of the game. However, if you're raising money to pay inflated costs because you like your plush office and your holidays and everything else, then you wouldn't want to sign up to it. But it straight away be a red flag for investors and for novice investors, because these are often the guys that get their pants pulled down. They see the bright lights and they see the crisp suits, and you know, before they know it, they're shoveling their hard earned in. But certainly in this market, if there was a charter in place, you could look and see, well, hold on, this board have signed up to this, how whatever the parameters were. It gives me a certain confidence and a certain belief in what they're doing.
No, I would agree with that. I mean, I'm going to make this assumption now, Darren, that, you know, given the fact that you started off at Manx and overseas, and you transitioned and you've invested and you've grown your own business, your builders merchants business, that you're on the cusp or at the stage where you are deemed to be a significant investor and probably a tier one investor in certain companies. Is that correct?
I am, yep.
Okay, so without divulging which ones you're in and tier one in stocks, what I want you to share with me, potentially, having not crystallized it throughout this interview, what is the secret of going from an investor that's invested £2,000 of hard-earned money into somebody that becomes a tier one investor in a company? What would you be saying to that individual that is or has that goal to become a tier one investor in a company? What do they need to be doing?
It's very, very simple for me. And unfortunately, I'm going to sound like a stuck record, but get off your backside, get to these events, get meeting these directors, get communicating privately with these directors. If your email gets ignored, if your inquiry gets ignored, look back at that information. You may inadvertently have asked a price sensitive question, but don't take that knockback or non-reply as a personal insult. Understand what you're asking.
Cool. Right, Darren, you know I love my books, and I'm always going on in these conquest corners about, is there anything that you've read? Is there a person that shared some information with you about investing that you go back and think, ah, that was the moment, you know, that delivered that to me in a sense of I'm now a better person in a sense I've learned that, you know, from that book? Or there's a book you're currently reading that you'd say, guys, get out there, ladies, get out there and give that book a read.
A very, very good question. I've just gonna expand on this ever so slightly. I didn't actually read a single book until I was 15. Now my wife goes mad about the number of books I've got.
We're in the same boat, mate.
But listen, listen. If I was to say to anybody at any level, go to Stock Picker Paul Mumford. It covers a lot of areas. Absolutely fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Yeah. You get a real understanding of what a guy's looking for. He's not complicated. He knows what he's looking for in a business. He's also bought some small caps. So that would be my recommendation.
Yeah, Paul Mumford's been around for such a long time. You know what I mean? And he's learned the hard way. And the great thing about it is that, like you say, he's done it amongst mainly the small caps, you know, and he's done it so well, you know, has a fantastic, successful career. And he's on my list of fund managers that I'm trying to get on my hit list regarding investing. So I'll keep you posted on whether or not I'm successful in that pursuit.
Hey, listen, if you get Paul Mumford on, tell him that there's a beer on me for him. It's his approach. It makes so much sense. It genuinely does. And even for it covers. It's great for the new investor, but also for the seasoned investor. And as with all of us, he probably doesn't even quite appreciate what he's written. But it's a personal view, personal opinion. But no, I see he's a guy. Whose hand I'd like to shake one day.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is, he's done it the hard way. He's been involved in AIM stocks, you know, for over a decade now, you know, and he's been in the city since, crikey, I don't know how long. He's been in there
for a good 30 years. Manager of the Cavendish Opportunities Fund since 1988.
Well, there you go. Been at it, you know, 30 years nearly, mate. So he's been in the city since about 63, I think.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, and his background story is interesting as well. But anyway,
Okay, so that's your book recommendation, and I'll appreciate that. I'll share that with the listeners. Now, Darren, I've covered all my questions. Yeah, I didn't know if there's anything you wanted to encapsulate our interview with. You've touched on the fact the importance of due diligence, research, getting in front of the CEOs and CFOs. Attending events, etc. If there's anything else you wanted to close with, I just want to say thank you ever so much for sharing your info and your time with me.
Yeah, no, if there was one thing I probably haven't said, that if there's of any age, is have confidence in what you're doing, because you are no different to anyone else, and just believe in it. And if you believe in it, you'll learn. And if you learn, you'll be successful.
Brilliant. I love that conclusion there, Darren. Thank you ever so much, chap. And I look forward to seeing you at another event soon, wherever that may be. Most probably in the Midlands, if not down in London somewhere. But I look forward to having further chats with you and sharing the knowledge, as they say, in your neck of the woods.
And that's why I've done this interview, Peter. It is all about your own personal experiences. And I appreciate the opportunity to share those. So thank you very much.
You are most welcome, mate. And as they say in business and in life, always pass it forward, mate.
Oh, most definitely.
All right, Darren. Take care. God bless
and you, Peter.
Once again, mate.
Take care now.
Bye-bye. Bye for now.